Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008. Who is Ma'ayan Tswaig. She's an Israeli citizen, and she lives, I'm not sure she still lives, but we're going to check in with her, in the Gaza region. And in fact, she spoke to Michael on round about October the 10th, if I'm not mistaken, soon after the October the 7th incident. And it was quite harrowing to hear about what had gone on there. If I'm not mistaken, they were in the safe room for about 30 hours while her husband and some of his friends were protecting the area. Ma'ayan, a very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm okay. Most of the time is okay. Thank you. You know, wow,
that's not bad.
How are you doing?
I am doing good. Thank you. You know, I was actually in preparation for this discussion. I was listening to your interview, and what was so difficult about it is it was so raw, because it was just a few days later, and I could hear in that discussion you obviously couldn't process. I don't even think we had the information at that point. Take yourself
exactly.
Where you are now compared to where you are then. Tell us how you're managing.
Well, first of all, I think when we were speaking back then, we were still counting the people. We were phoning everybody, finding who's alive, who's not, who's available. It was because at that moment, at that time, the army and the government, they didn't have a clue. The only people that were able to actually say, yeah, I've seen him last night, or yes, he was in the shift of picking up you know, cucumbers. It was only us.
Right.
So we were sitting at tables, you know, at the petrol stations, and just phoning and finding out how many people are alive, how many people are not, who's not available, who was at the party. You know, those are, you know, they were kids. I mean, the 21, 24, 18, 19 years old kids. And they don't phone their parents, you know. So we were checking out.
Just remind us where
they
you
didn't phone their parents because.
Just remind us where you live in the region.
Perfect. I live in Sde Avraham. Sde Avraham is in Eshkol region. It's 4 kilometers direct to Rafiah.
Okay.
To Rafa.
Wow.
So right now we are in the zone of war. Now the bombs started to, I mean, it's the attack of the army we are attacking, and it's triggering. I've got to be honest.
I'm sure it is. It has to take you right back there.
It's, well, we've been in the region for, we now are a year. We are in this region. We're back at home because my husband was there all the time. So I needed to bring back all the family.
Right.
And most of the, I mean, not most of the citizens, the 60% of the citizens of Eshkol region came back. People that have the houses, and they wanted to come back home to be with their friends. And I'm specifically saying friends because the kids actually decided for us. They said, we want to study together. We want to be with them together. We just want to be together. And that's how most of the citizens came back to the region, to be together as a community. Right. That's how amazing,
incredible that,
and powerful. We as Jewish people want to be.
Resilient.
We cherish family. Mm. We cherish family. We cherish community. We have fights. Don't get me wrong. We hate each other. We love each other.
But well, that's family, right?
You know, it's not a whole pink, dream, but it's so amazing how we hug each other all the time.
And
all the time.
Right. And,
so
and I'm sure to some extent, the being with each other, which who are people that have actually you all understand what you've all been through. It's not as though you're in...
We are processing it now, together. I think we're
I'm processing it now.
Yeah, we don't get it. I literally think we don't get it. I mean, I was 30 hours at the safe room, and we didn't have electricity, we didn't have phones, we didn't have anything, and we didn't even have red alert because the red alert stopped. The only thing that was carrying on was missiles, and then there's shootings and everything, so you didn't even know, we didn't even understand what's going on. But I'll tell you what we do understand.
Right.
We do understand that it's up to us. That's the main message. It's up to us to rebuild. It's up to us to change the mood. It's up to us to bring back the spirit and to rebuild this region. I mean, I was driving now on 232. I drive it all day long. I mean, all the time. There's constant triggers and reminders. You know, a guy that I was teaching died there, and in that shelter. And another one is, it's really triggering all the time. It's not just a news, you know, that you hear on radio. It's every single minute, and it's within us. So we understand that it's up to us. And I've got to be honest, I don't know if you heard the interview that I was doing yesterday with Betsy. I said to her, we smile most of the time. Your eyes are broken, our hearts are broken, and our, our chest is shattered by means of governments, by means of people. I mean, the world, how are they treating you guys in South Africa? I mean, it's insane.
It is.
I was a combat fighter, and now I'm not allowed to come back to South Africa. I'm a citizen of South Africa.
Right.
And I'm not allowed to come back to South Africa. So, but we understand that we are so shattered. But the next thing you see, we just carrying on. We do the education frameworks. We built the roads. We communicate. It's up to us. We really want to change. And the change,
you know, we see this,
comes from within.
We see this even with the former hostages. We see it with the families. We, you know, from a little bit outside, I think we consider ourselves outside insiders to a great extent. And I watch them and I think, how do you get up in the morning? How do you get up in the morning having been through what you've been through, having lost what you've lost, and yet you're going to America and you're fighting for the other hostages and you are rebuilding it. The strength of that is,
you know what it is?
What is it?
You know what it is? Mm-hmm. It's the realization that you're breathing air from the moment that you open your eyes. And I don't know if you say Modani Lifanecha. I don't know if you say that, but I don't, but when you wake up and you realize that the air that you breathe and your lungs are not sore, or they are available to breathe in and out, you say, "Oh my God, we are alive!" And you focus on that, and literally we focus on that, and the next thing you say, "What can I do?" How do I help?
Do people around you getting psychological and emotional assistance, or is it just this constant processing with each other and yourselves?
It depends if they are ready to process it. For example, my kids don't go. They decided, "Mom, shut up. I don't need, leave me alone," like that. But it depends on the people.
Yeah.
But we go. There is a full help.
Right. I mean, your kids were with you, right? You know, so they were in the room for 30 hours. How does that not change their lives forever?
You're talking about change. Their friends died. Yeah. They saw the pictures on the WhatsApp. Their friends, they saw their shirt, the soccer shirt, and they said, "Oh my God, that's Evan." And Evan is the kid that died with his family. And the next thing, you know, they process it. But of course, it's a fake. For example, my 15 years old doesn't want to go to soccer anymore. He thinks it's all fake because everybody carried on. So he stopped soccer. But that's his response. My little kid, who's now 13 years old, he was 11 when everything happened. He lost 20 of his friends.
Oh my God.
And their parents, and their parents are our best friends. And he said, yeah, I'm playing. I'm doing everything. I live for them.
He lost 20 friends.
I make sure that I carry on. He lost 20 friends, yeah. The 15 years old, he's just a little bit more closed.
Right.
The little one, he's crazy. My eldest one, she's 18. She was at matric at that. Matric at that year. And they've lost one of one girl was murdered with her father, but they carry on. She said, I don't want to be in a school now. I want to live. I want to help everybody else. So she's now doing a service year before military. Shnat Sherut. It's right. Like a Shnat Sherut. She's helping communities.
Yes. National service.
So I think everybody. Yeah, so everybody's doing different the way that they see resilience. You see, we have now a female, Michal Peleguziau. She's a very good friend of ours, and she's the new region manager. How you say? Rashat Mota.
The situation, maybe situation manager, commander.
No. She's the region manager.
Head of the region.
Head of the region. Here we go. She's Michal Peleguziau, and her deputy is Alon Vilozhny. They pushing to rebuild. They are resilient. And don't get me wrong. We all the friends that came. I mean, we're talking about. A couple of weeks ago, we heard that Shiri Bibas is alive. She's not in the coffin. She's not in the coffin. She's in a coffin. She's our friend, you know, and the kids and how they killed them. And the next thing, we go to the road at middle of the night and saying her last prayer. It's insane. It's insane how we dealing with how we have to deal with things, but we're dealing with it, because again, it's in the morning that we hear we see that we open our eyes. We have to carry on.
And
you're breathing.
And that's in a way a responsibility to their memory as well, and not just the Bibases, but everybody's.
Everybody.
Yeah. How much?
Yalomi was the most amazing person. He's the father of a kid that was playing soccer with us, and he was a surrounding officer. He's taking care of the environment, and he was one of the most amazing person. And he's the last one that came back in a coffin, and it was heartbreaking. It's lungs breaking. I don't know how to call it.
Do you how much do your kids know about the ongoing trauma? I mean, if the Bibas family, of course, were close friends, they know, and then you can't not know. You're living in that environment. But what kind of a do you protect your kids from anything, from any of the detail? Is there a point?
No point whatsoever. Sorry, it was a smile. There is no point. They are so connected. We are in the war. I mean, they hear the bombs. They've got army soldiers next to their class.
Right.
The soldiers are in the school in case of.
Right.
We live.
Yeah, you're living in
2 kilometers. It's two kilometers from the Gaza Strip, from Rafiah, from Khan Yunis.
In other
That's
words,
where
it's
the
not
school is.
It's not done. It's not over. You're actually busy living through the traumas in the continues. It's not as though you can close it and then just deal with it and move forward, because you are involved with it every single day.
Exactly. Wow, you've nailed it. We don't look at it in the past. We are so walking.
It's your living experience.
With it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a living experience. I mean, I go to work in Sderot. I've got an office here, and I drive 232 every single day, twice a day. 232, and you see the Nova, and you see Re'im, and you see the Eri, and you live it.
And in terms of those places, the Kfar Aza, Be'eri, that were so hard hit, have people started, are they able to start moving back there yet?
It depends on your house and it depends on your kids, your education framework.
Right.
When it comes to people that don't have their kids in their, in schools, they moved in. There are so many new citizens that came in to help and rebuild. So they're living in the area.
This is incredible.
So it's insanely incredible. I'm talking about 175 initiatives of people coming and building, taking hammer, taking, you know, and a screw, and they do it. And I'm part of it. So I deal with it. The impact investment. So I see it. I know it. And you see how amazing they are. And they are 27 years old, 25 years old. And guess what? There are 60 years old that decided that they want to do a service,
amazing.
Community service. And they come
incredible.
In and do babysitting
So here's the thing. So here's the question. The one of the first things that I noticed, I came to the region, I came to see the region probably about 2 months afterwards. And one of the things that I could not get over was that feeling of abandonment, that there was no army because there was no funding for that the time before. And then weapons were locked it was just a very, very, there was definitely the sense that the communities there were living under a false illusion of safety. But in reality, there had been abandoned. What you're talking about now is the very, very opposite of being abandoned. The world is, well, the Jewish world, even the Christian world that cares for Israel is embracing Israel, embracing your region and everything that you're going through. Do you feel that difference? Did you feel the abandonment, and do you feel the embracing now?
Absolutely. I felt abandoned. I felt distrust. I felt disbelief, no hope. I felt that my parents left me, you know, that kind of a thing. No one cares. How could you do that? And it's a shattering moment, by the way. You don't know who to trust. Don't know who to trust, but exactly what you're saying, the people, look who's embracing us. Look who's helping the weak right now. We were not weak back then, but now we are weak. We are weak a year and 530 days. We are very weak. And the hug that we get is from people, not governments, not public, leave them aside. They are too busy working on something. I don't know what they're doing, but the people that are helping is private initiatives. It's the people that got heart, that let the heart speak. And thank God there is so many.
Absolutely.
Yes, I definitely feel the embrace. First of all, the phone call. Betsy phoned me and it was emotionally, I said, wow, thank you for remembering me.
Yeah,
and you're talking to me on the radio. Thank you for remembering me. I'm important.
But you are important, and you're, but very important, because this is, and this connects us, and this connects our listeners to something that we feel so strongly about, but we don't always get insight into the details, into the nuance, into what you're going through, you know, and there's a danger that we just see it in two dimensions, you know, as this event, not as something that is an ongoing struggle every single day, the good and the bad in all of that. And I think that's what's so important. We do need to leave it there. Marjan Zweig, thank you for having such a courageous, authentic, and real conversation with us. The response from our listeners is tremendous. Marjan is an Israeli citizen. She lives in one of the impacted areas just right alongside Gaza. And she shared her story with us this morning.